Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
Hello and welcome to the Managing Uncertainty podcast. This is Brian Strauser, Principal and CEO here at BrightPath. And in this week's episode, we'd like to walk through our new framework for a global security program, or you could call it a corporate security framework if that's kind of the frame of reference that you prefer to use. But during my career, I spent, prior to coming founding BrightPath, I spent about 21 years working on a global security team for a Fortune 30 organization, ultimately spending about 6 years leading that company's business continuity, crisis management, disaster recovery, and global intelligence function. But I had a lot of experience working and supporting different parts of the global security business. And not too long ago, we were working with a client here in the Twin Cities who was trying to stand up the global security capability. And so we built this framework from our standpoint, kind of representing here's our view of how we should think about building a global security program. So let's take a look at this. And of course, if you go to the episode page, you're able to download our global security framework as a graphic and able to kind of follow along as we take a look at how to do this. Starting on the left, the first category for a global security framework is physical security capability. And we really think about this and investigations, which is the second category here. We really think about these as being the principal kind of foundational starting place for a global security framework. The ability to secure facilities in order to keep people and assets safe. And then second, the ability to investigate things that are happening that are outside the norm or that might be criminal in nature that affect the integrity of the organization. So with physical security, we start with the priorities. The life safety of employees, a workplace violence prevention program. So how do we prevent workplace violence through training and policies and things along those lines? Third is threat management. Once we've had an incident of a threat reported internally, externally, social media, email, how does that get handled? What's the threat management program? How is the threat triaged? And then if necessary, formally assessed, and then plans put into place. And you can look at or listen to our previous episodes on workplace violence and threat management frameworks and risk factors and escalations for ideas and more of a deep dive into that area. The fourth area under physical security is planning and design. So this is for new or remodel facilities. But what is the application of crime prevention through environmental design? How are we planning these facilities with security requirements in mind from the beginning, etc.? Access control, what is the approach to securing access to the facilities? This could be key control, it could be a card access system, it could be biometrics, but what is the program, the official program for maintaining and controlling access to the facility? Next is security presence. What's the visible security presence, whether that's security officers, plainclothes security individuals, armed security, robots or video analytics or other things that are clearly visible that create that security presence that deters crime and kind of reinforces the right behavior. And then lastly, in physical security, just culture and awareness. Culture in terms of what's the culture around following the security controls that have been put into place, and awareness around what are those, how is security communicating what they're doing? What kind of material is out there? Intranet, digital, internal social media, external social media, posters, and things like that, that help drive awareness of the security program. So that's physical security to us, one of the two major foundational elements of a global security strategy and program. The second is investigations. The ability to investigate something that is abnormal or something that is wrong or something that has been reported. So the first area is just investigative policies. What are the roles and responsibilities in the organization? How are investigations conducted? What are the ground rules around that? The second is we expect the investigative capability of a global security team to be independent. Independent in that, although at the end of the day, we all have a boss, right? But independent in that they are driven by the security organization who ultimately reports to a senior executive. And the investigators are able to investigate with a high degree of independence. That doesn't mean they're not talking with lawyers, internal or external, to the organization. It doesn't mean that they aren't taking direction, but it does mean that they're able to follow the investigation where the investigation leads. The third area here in investigations is just what are the investigative capabilities and technologies? Do they have the tools or case management systems or other things that they need? The next area in investigations is compliance and investigations around our major anti-bribery laws and our major anti-terrorism laws. So this is the OFAC regulations, the Office of Foreign Asset Compliance, where we're verifying that we're not doing business with third parties that U.S. companies are prohibited from doing business with. And then paired with that, the FCPA, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, where we're validating that our organization is not bribing individuals in foreign governments or in foreign countries in order to do business. Next is exception reporting. What's available to the investigations function in order to detect and find exceptional behavior? And by exceptional, I mean abnormal, things that stand out. And they may be legit and not criminal in nature and not impacting the integrity of the organization. But there's reports that allows us to see exceptions and allows investigations to commence, investigators to dig deeper into those exceptions. And then lastly, that your organization has an integrity or a reporting hotline, an integrity hotline or a reporting hotline, something that allows them, employees and vendors and parts of your supply chain and others to report unethical behavior, and that those hotline reports are then investigated and sent to the right unit within the organization to follow up on. You know, someone could call the integrity hotline for a sexual harassment issue that probably goes to HR or employment relations attorneys or something like that. But something of a security nature should come to the security team for follow-up and investigation. So physical security and investigations, that's kind of our foundation for our global security framework. The next section, we start dealing with crisis management is the first category. So here, do we have a crisis management program? Do we have a defined crisis management team? Have we built a defined escalation process and a crisis management framework that allows for decisions to be made through a collaborative process and then communicating the results of those decisions? To us, those three things are where we start. We have a defined crisis team with clear roles and responsibilities. We have a process to escalate things to that team and for them to communicate upwards to executives and to the board, if that's applicable. And then we have a framework on how to collaborate and make decisions and communicate the results of those decisions. Once those things are in place, then we look for specific scenario crisis planning. What are the top 10, 12, 15, 20 risk-based scenarios that we need to have specific plan annexes for? Sometimes we think of something called a playbook that has all of this kind of laid out. Here's our crisis playbook, and now we're going to execute upon the things in that. And then lastly, that we have a good process, crisis management process, for simulations and exercises. The next bucket is travel safety and security. And this isn't always applicable to organizations, but if you are traveling, and particularly if your employees are traveling internationally to higher risk locations than where you're typically doing business, you probably need some element of a travel safety and security program. It starts with the legal concept around duty to care, that you are planning and making the life safety and safety and security of your employees is important to your organization. Travel safety and security starts with duty to care, but it moves relatively quickly into travel policies. Like, what are the travel policies? Are we looking at the risk of countries or cities or regions that employees are traveling to? and that we understand that there is a process in place in order to restrict travel and puts guidelines in place to ensure the safety and security of our travelers. For example, in my previous employer, we had a country risk assessment process and a travel security council. And through that travel security council, we could bar travel to certain countries or certain regions because they were not safe for folks to go to, in our opinion. But again, this varies by organization. We then look for companies to risk rate countries, whether you're working with a company like International SOS or Control Risk Group, to use their country risk ratings, or you're doing something internally. Then we look for monitoring for major events that are happening near where your travelers are at or where they're going. We talk about this as intelligence monitoring, but it pairs closely with a travel tracking capability where you have the ability to see where your employees are at, and you're able to see the events around them that might create risk. For example, a few years ago, one of our clients, there was a active shooter event going on in Germany, and one of our clients' chief financial officer was there, actually within about half of a kilometer of where the event was going on. We knew that he was there. We had a travel tracking capability. We were able to quickly make contact with him and get him to a safe location, and then we're able to evacuate him safely back to his hotel. That's the kind of travel tracking and event or intelligence monitoring that you really need to have in place. And then lastly, for travelers internationally, you're going to want to have third-party medical and security support for when these events do happen or when someone gets sick. And particularly in some parts of the world, you need a vetted medical provider or access to vetted medical providers. You do not want your folks just walking up to the nearest hospital or clinic, because you will wind up having folks in places that are perhaps not safe and where they're not getting the level of care that you're going to want them to have. So that's travel safety and security. The next area talks about partnerships, and here we're looking at what are the public-private partnerships for an organization and their connectivity with the global security team. And we have these in several areas, and you know, where you prioritize here would really depend upon the maturity of your organization and where you're operating and what those risks are. But some of the partnerships we should look at are with emergency management agencies, and you have these typically local, county, state, and then federal across the United States, and other countries are somewhat similar to this. Some countries only have this at a national level. Law enforcement, what is your relationship with local law enforcement and law enforcement at different levels that may impact the business that you're in? If you are operating, if you're a significant global operator, you will want to have partnerships with the intelligence community. You can look at the public-private partnership programs at the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, or through the State Department's Overseas Security Advisory Council, or through the FBI's Domestic Security Alliance Council, or for smaller organizations, FBI's InfraGuard. But are you getting access to the information that you need to make sure that you're making the right moves as an organization to secure your business and protect your team? You also have the opportunity to interact with peers. So this kind of industry connectivity through your trade groups or local, regional, and state chambers of commerce. And then, you know, in a really mature organization, we would look to see a public-private sector strategy and evidence of collaboration, that there's a deliberate strategic effort to build partnerships with public sector agencies where the company has something to gain in terms of information and insight, perhaps an early look at some things. And the agency, the public sector agency, gains from the company's expertise and information about what's going on. The next category here is executive and event security. And I lump these together because we lumped these together because we typically see the same leader have responsibility for both. But in a large enough organization, this is about protecting your senior executives, perhaps at home, perhaps in travel, perhaps only at company events, perhaps it's 24/7. This depends on your organization. The second part here is just major events planning, large company meetings, shareholder meetings, big vendor financial community presentations. These are all possibilities of things that need to be planned and then managed. And it requires a little different level of care, which is why we often see this aligned with executive protection. And then lastly, corporate aviation. Perhaps you own or lease aircraft and operate them yourselves, or perhaps you have some kind of agreement with a company like NetJets or Flight Options or something else. But just the management of the security aspects of your corporate aviation unit, we would see that program falling into this area. The next category is an operations center or a GSOC, a global security operations center, or just a SOC, a security operations center. In a global security program, we look to see the operations center set up as a single source of truth. They're a trusted part of the organization that's communicating what's going on. They have a lot of information flowing in, and then they're pushing out communication that is relevant and timely and impactful and provides a good overview from a situational awareness standpoint of what's going on. In large organizations, GSOC centers like this run 24/7. They're actively monitoring a number of things going on around the country and world. They're likely the starting point for an incident management process that then escalates into a crisis management or crisis leadership process. And we see a GSOC as being a really core to that, that they're monitoring what's going on. They're kind of at the base of that crisis leadership process, even though you may have a crisis management team that comes in and does more as things go on. And we also see GSOCs as being a place for centralized security operations. They may be dispatching security officers. They may be responding to a ShotSpotter alert and things along those lines. And then getting to the far right of our framework graphic, we see an intelligence program as an important part of a global security framework, particularly in a more mature organization. And we typically see kind of three categories of intelligence and then kind of a foundational element here with intelligence. The first is geopolitical intelligence, like what's going on around the world that may have an impact on us, looking at major events that are playing out. May go as far as to look at just, you know, politics. I mean, as we're recording this in September 2019, there's major political earthquakes going on in Great Britain, in the United Kingdom around Brexit. There's a lot of things happening with that. There's a lot of instability that's being generated through the Brexit process in the UK and in London. There's been protests with thousands of people. If you operate in the UK or you have UK companies in your supply chain or this is your next expansion market, then this geopolitical intelligence on what's going on over there could be important to you. If you don't, it probably has nothing to do with you. So that's a domain, an intelligence domain that could or couldn't be important depending upon your business. The second area for intel is corporate and reputational intelligence, that we're looking for that information we're looking for information and intelligence that may impact our reputation. We might see an inbound threat on our intel radar screen, so to speak, where, you know, an executive make a misstatement in the media, and now this is coming back at us on Twitter and gaining steam in terms of a story. The third category is cyber intelligence. So here we're looking at, kind of the whole cyber threat picture. This may not belong in a global security team. It could be cyber intelligence is being managed by your cybersecurity organization or by your CISO, but we often find the intel component in global security. And then lastly, kind of a foundational element here is just public-private partnerships in the intelligence community about your connectivity between your intel team, if you have one internally, and the intelligence community through some of the sources that we've mentioned before. And then our last category here on the global security framework is the supply chain. First, we're looking at end-to-end supply chain security from the dock at your vendor's warehouse all the way until it shows up at your organization. What's the security of that supply chain? Who are you dependent upon to make that supply chain secure along the way? This could be your ocean carriers. It could be air freight. It could be big common carriers like UPS and DHL, FedEx, and others. Second is just supply chain reputation. Are you sourcing responsively from vendors that are not going to compromise the integrity of your organization. And sometimes that requires an investigative capability to really dig into that, or perhaps you're purchasing that information through a third party. There's the investigative capability within your supply chain. So if you got a truck that gets hijacked in Guatemala and it's got your product on board, how are you going to investigate that? And do you have any loss to begin with? And then how are you going to investigate it? Do you have access to the experts that can assist with an investigation at a location like that? And then lastly, there's the Customs Trade Partnership Against Terrorism, or CTPAT, that allows you access to the priority lanes in U.S. ports because you're following the requirements of the CTPAT program, which are a much greater level of security of your supply chain shipments and the integrity of your suppliers and such than a normal run-of-the-mill, you know, ocean-going or air freight shipment. So that's our global security framework. Again, we laid this out as our view of what a global security program should look like. We left out some foundational things like, budgeting and, IT capabilities and some of the things that are going to kind of be there as the foundation of any organization. But they're the same. Those are really the same across different functions of a company, not just unique to global security. But this is our view of things companies should think about in terms of the elements of a global security program. And again, you can go to our page for this episode and download the global security framework, and then you get a nice pretty PDF that you can follow along with as you listen to the episode or use for other purposes as things go along. That's it for this episode of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. We'll be back next week with another new episode. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.